What's up, Pharmacy Nation? I'm Pharmacy Joe. Thank you for listening to the Elective Rotation, a critical care pharmacy podcast. This is episode 352. In this episode, I'll discuss using basal insulin in the treatment of diabetic ketoacidosis. I have all the evidence supporting today's show linked up in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode352. The length of ICU stay for a patient with diabetic ketoacidosis is prolonged by the amount of time it takes to transition the patient from IV to subcutaneous insulin. Long-acting insulins can have a role in this transition, potentially leading to a shorter length of stay in the ICU and, by extension, the hospital. A recent review in the European Journal of Internal Medicine covers the evidence and rationale for long-acting insulin use in patients with DKA. In a prospective randomized study of 61 patients with DKA, daily sub-Q injections of insulin glargine at 0.25 units per kilo of body weight starting within 12 hours of the initiation of IV insulin infusion were compared with usual care. The authors sought to determine whether initiation of a long-acting insulin therapy concurrently with IV insulin infusion would decrease the rate of rebound hyperglycemia after discontinuation of the insulin infusion. Capillary blood glucose measurements were obtained up to 12 hours after the insulin infusion was DC'd. Rebound hyperglycemia was defined as a blood glucose level greater than 180 milligrams per deciliter. Overall, 93.5% of subjects in the control group had at least one glucose value above 180 milligrams during the 12-hour follow-up period. This was significantly greater than the rate of rebound hyperglycemia in the intervention group, which was only 33.3%. The effect of the intervention was apparent in subjects who presented with DKA after solid organ transplantation and in patients with other surgical and medical diagnoses. There were 3 hypoglycemic measurements in 2 control subjects and none in the intervention group. The authors concluded once daily sub-Q insulin glargine administered during IV infusion is a safe method for preventing future rebound hyperglycemia without increased risk of hypoglycemia. Another group of authors carried out a prospective randomized controlled trial comparing the co-administration of insulin glargine and IV insulin with IV insulin alone. The primary outcome of time to closure of anion gap was compared between groups using a general linear model, adjusting for initial anion gap etiology and presence of comorbidities. Similarly, the secondary outcome of hospital length of stay was adjusted for age, etiology, and hospital site in the general linear model. All patients received IV insulin. Additionally, the experimental group was given sub-Q insulin glargine within 2 hours of diagnosis. Upon closure of the anion gap, patients in the control group were subsequently transitioned to long-acting insulin. In the study group, IV insulin was discontinued and long-acting sub-Q insulin was reinstituted 24 hours after the initial introduction. A total of 40 patients were enrolled in this pilot trial. The mean estimated time to closure of anion gap was 10.2 hours in the experimental group and 11.6 hours in the control group. This was not a statistically significant difference. The mean estimated hospital length of stay was 3.9 days in the experimental group and 4.8 in the control. And again, although this is a trend in favor of the experimental group, it was not statistically significant. Incidences of hypoglycemia, rates of ICU admission, and ICU length of stay were similar between groups. So the authors concluded from this study that co-administration of glargine in combination with an insulin infusion in acute management of DKA is feasible, but that further study was needed to determine the true efficacy in terms of time to closure of anion gap and hospital length of stay. The panel of experts that published the Joint British Diabetes Society's guideline for the management of DKA recommends continuing a patient's home dose of long-acting insulin during the initial management of DKA. This recommendation is not based on evidence, but rather the assumption that basal insulin in normal daily doses is unlikely to adversely affect the patient's response to an IV insulin infusion and can be expected to facilitate the transition from IV insulin infusion to subcutaneous insulin. This potentially limits rebound hyperglycemia, as was seen in the first study, and ketogenesis when IV insulin is stopped and may avoid excess length of stay. Members of my Hospital Pharmacy Academy have access to my in-depth trainings on DKA, HHS treatment, insulin use in critically ill patients, and insulin dosing for general hospitalized patients. For instant access to these and over 50 other practical clinical pharmacy trainings, go to pharmacyjoe.com/academy. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you in the next episode of the Elective Rotation.